Welcome, everyone, to the What the Force. I'm Marie-Claire Gould, your host, and today we are covering Visions Volume 2, The Bandits of Golek. And with me for all of these deep dives is my good friend, Hammy. Welcome back, Hammy.
Namaste, everyone.
this is the one, Hammy. This is what you've been training for. You literally got back from India.
Yes.
Like, recently.
Yes, 2 weeks ago. I'm 2 weeks back from India. If we haven't given it away, this short is by 88 Pictures from India. So, of course, I was very excited to see what this one was going to bring. And like all of these, this was a very personal story. It's very connected to the creators. You can tell from every aspect of the mythology, the settings, the characters, everything. It's Star Wars, but told from the perspective of these creators around the world. So it was great. As an Indian, I was proud. So it's Indian American, I should say. But
you know, it was just really cool to see the animation specifically. Like, the animation was different and interesting, and like, felt, even though it was like 3D, it felt gritty. You know, in some ways, I thought that was like really a cool stylistic choice for this specifically. A couple of things about this. I really felt like there was, like the train on the tracks that they start on, it felt like there's a sense of inevitability of things happening no matter what they want through the story. Like, the story was pushing them ever forward to the inevitable conclusion in this, which I thought was really interesting. Bandits of Golek, which the title itself confused me for a really long time, but I do think that there's a bit of a tie to sort of social bandits, which the best examples for many Western audiences would be sort of folk heroes like Robin Hood, where they are considered to be some of the earliest versions from a folklore perspective of civil disobedience. So people who are regarded as the societal like protectors or doing crimes to that are actually accepted by a vast majority of people who are without power. So like how Robin Hood steals from the rich and gives to the poor. I think that's the bandits idea that they're playing with, not kind of the scary I steal money from innocent people bandits. I just want to call that out.
No, I love that comparison, and that's it's definitely, I think, probably what they were thinking of as well. Our two main protagonists for this short were Charuk and Rani, their siblings. Charuk is the older brother, and they are on the run to Golek. We know that they've left their village behind, and then we first meet them. Rani is worried about her father. She says, will he be okay at the village? It makes it seem kind of like maybe their father had sent Charuk on this mission. You were speaking of inevitability. Mm-hmm. At least to me, it seemed like the father had sent them on this mission to bandit and protect Rani. I think that's what they're actually smuggling.
Yeah.
Is where they're smuggling Rani out of the village and to a safe house, to a safe place.
And it's kind of like they call themselves like the bandits too, like the two of them. So like they're on this like mission, which is interesting because they're kind of against the man or the empire, which is around.
Yes. So we find out while they're on the train that Rani is force sensitive and that she's supposed to be hiding that. Charuk doesn't want them to find out because the empire will find out. I guess culturally, the biggest parallel that I could draw, of course, is with the British Raj. It felt very similar to me. And you know, my family has experienced it, but I hadn't personally experienced it. So it was kind of interesting to see in this way. I've seen it obviously in many Indian movies. You know, when you're just like in the previous one with the spy dancer, where you're operating in the underground, when you have an occupied space with the empire or the British Raj. So there's this whole other layer of society that's kind of happening. And so that's what Charuk and Rani are part of. And that's where they're also going, where Golek is. When we get there too, it's similar. That it's another kind of hideout space, similar to how it was in The Spy Dancer. Since we're at the start of the short, I just wanted to point out all of the Indian cultural elements that you're kind of blasted with as soon as you start.
Yeah, you are. It's like deep dive into it.
Yeah, you fully know you're on an Indian planet, as it were. So we have the train, which is a huge part of Indian culture. It's, you know, the form of transportation that's most common for people going from city to city throughout India. It's part of our culture, even in Bollywood movies. The creators kind of mentioned Sholay, which is this one of the most famous Indian movies of all time. There's a train. There's so many train sequences in Indian cinema. And so it totally would make sense that as soon as the train showed up and the kind of the way the train is, where people are kind of it's standing room only. It's very crowded. Mm-hmm. It is an Indian train. Of course, the clothing that Shah Rukh and Rani are wearing, Golok itself is a town, food, the music, everything kind of like hits you with all the Indian stuff. So I just wanted to kind of call that out.
Yeah, it felt very immersive. Like this was definitely inspired by India.
Mm-hmm.
Rani is obsessed with the flute that's in Chirag's bag and actually wants to play it. And he's like, not now. This is not the time, right?
Because it would draw attention to them.
Draw attention, you know, not necessarily like it would just make them noticeable. I think it was kind of like his concern. So she ends up using the force to pull the flute out of his bag as he's off to go and get some food. And flutes themselves, and they call it a flute, is the instrument most associated musically with joy. So
yes,
I love it.
And it's from their father. It's been passed down to them from their father. And in all of these shorts, we've been getting a lot of music motifs and symbolism, art, dance.
Yeah,
so same thing. That's actually how Indian flutes look.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So that's right.
Flutes themselves are just based without reeds, and so the sound itself is the most associated with joy when you create music with them. And I also think that like this sort of shows like Rani's instincts are and the force are related to just feelings of joy, and like that's very, very it's a common motif in Star Wars, and how George Lucas thought about Star Wars, and how, you know, Joseph Campbell sort of would talk about Star Warsian mythic concepts, that like if you're on your own journey, you're seeking your own joy, right? You're following your bliss. And her instinct is to do that, which I think is great.
Yes. And when you were saying that her instinct is to reach for joy, she also has this like kind of infectious smile. Mm-hmm. She's very bubbly and happy. And you can tell that Charu kind of is the poor Charu is the one that has the weight on him through all of this. So where she's very innocent and pure. And even, you know, when she starts playing the flute, it kind of gives you that feeling right away too when she's playing. So the train is almost attacked by these rebels. So we kind of get a train chase, and the rebels are trying to get onto the train. They're called the Junguri in this on this planet. You know, it's just calling back to that there's a resistance, not just the empire on this planet.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
At the end of the train ride, they make it to Golok, and they're still in hiding and kind of sneaking around. But they run into an old lady named Rugal, who says that they can eat, but they have to leave because there's a storm coming. And so they start to eat, but of course, Rani cannot stay away from the force. And so she kind of is joking around with Charak and lifts up a plate of food. And then he kind of distracts her for a minute. So she slams it into someone, causing a fight at the village. And it kind of gives away that she's force sensitive. Everyone kind of says, oh, she lifted that on her own without like her hands. What's going on? And so what ends up happening is an inquisitor shows up looking for them, saying that he's heard about this girl on a train who is force sensitive. And now everyone's talking about it in the village as well. So he's saying, I think it's you. I think you're the one who is force sensitive. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about the Inquisitor himself, his design, his character design. I had noticed it right away as well, because in Indian mythology and Indian cinema, he looks kind of like these demons called Asura. And the creators confirmed that that was their inspiration. So there are these demons in Indian mythology. There's gods and then the demons, the Asuras. There's always this kind of battle of good and evil, like in many religions and mythology that goes on in Indian mythology. It's everywhere. And so these Asuras, they kind of look like that. They have mustaches. It's a very Indian mustache. And so the thing that's interesting about the Asuras, though, is that they can be menacing. They can be kind of evil. They are the representation of evil, but they're also very intelligent. So they will use kind of trickster to get you to fall into their traps. So this Inquisitor is clearly channeling that, and he lets them know that he's killed everyone in their village, and so we can assume that includes their father.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a really sad moment. And suddenly a sandstorm hits, And so he's prevented from capturing them. And that is when Rugal, the old woman from before, has her chance to reveal herself as a Jedi. And she starts fighting the Inquisitor.
And this is Rugal is actually tied to a goddess like figure, like in this story, because she comes to the rescue of the two of them in this moment.
Yes. So like I had mentioned, the asuras, the demons in Indian mythology, the one example that I kind of wanted to give, because it's related to my most recent visit, I visited Mysore in India, where the legend is that this story took place, Mysore, and the asura in the story is named Mahosura. So everyone thinks that Mysuru is from the same name. So basically it's this asura. We even went to the temple of the goddess who ends up killing him. But basically, like I had mentioned, the Asuras are tricksters. So Mahasura is a trickster, kind of like Loki. That would be our Western kind of equivalent. The one thing, though, about Mahasura is that he was pious to Brahma. So even though he's kind of a trickster and he's joking around and doing all these evil deeds, the one good thing about him is that he is really loyal to Brahma. So what ends up happening is that Brahma... Brahma is one of the three big gods in Indian mythology. So, sorry, I should have said that. So he's really pious to Brahma, one of the three gods in Indian mythology, three big gods in Indian mythology. And so what Brahma does is he gives them this boon, and he says that you can't be defeated. Since you're so loyal to me, you cannot be defeated by either man nor God. Mm. And so what happens is, since he is a trickster, he takes advantage of this and he starts kind of causing chaos because he knows no man can kill him. And then he decides to invade heaven and start killing gods, because no god can kill him too. So the gods have a meeting. They all get together and they say, well, what are we going to do about this guy? So what they decide,
the worst.
Yeah, I can't believe Brahma would do this. There's other stuff about Brahma too, but so they get together and they're like, can't believe he did this. What are we going to do about this Mahasura guy? And so they realize, okay, let's find a loophole. He can't be killed by man or God. Well, he can be killed by a woman then. Oh. And so they find a woman. Her name is Durga. Indian Hindus around the world will know her because she's one of the biggest goddesses and most popular goddesses that's prayed to. So they find Durga, a woman, and they give her all of these powers to be able to fight him. And so they fight for 9 nights. The Hindu festival of Navratri is based on this. It's about her and the goddess, the female power, being able to defeat Mahasura. Mm-hmm. So they fight for 9 nights, and then she is the one who is able to defeat him and kill.
Wow.
All of this to say, it immediately made me think of Rugal, because it's a crone figure. It's an unexpected female entity that is saving these two young heroes. Mm-hmm. The female goddess is the one who saves them. And like we had mentioned in many of these shorts, the female energy is like through the roof through all of these. The female
the femme vibes are everywhere.
Yes, yes. So of course it would make sense that she would be the one to do it. And like you had put in the notes, she has these cane sabers. So her canes, what you had originally thought was just this, oh, let's ignore this old lady, she's actually a Jedi with sabers. It also reminded me of Durga, because Durga is usually depicted with many arms. That's very common with Indian goddesses. And so having these extensions of her, the sabers being extensions of her, it just reminded me of the images that I've seen since I was a kid of Durga.
That's amazing. Yeah. And I loved the motif of like the crone or the hermit being called out by the young kids, like the young heroes, to say, you got to come back into the action. Which is, you know, solidly what ends up happening here. Rani herself being a maiden figure in the story, archetypically being hunted, is also quite a common motif from a psychological perspective as she's leading into her journey, which this is a very different story than Screecher's Reach, but
I was literally going to make that comparison. Yes, I was going to make that comparison.
There's parallels. She's being hunted by a predator, and there's this expectation that there's no turning back, and there's an inevitability to the journey that Rani must take on her own by the end.
So Rugal is able to kill the Inquisitor, and he kind of has this shell-shocked look. He never in his life imagined that he was going to be killed. So he gets killed and he says, oh, a Jedi in Golok, who could have seen this coming? And so it was just kind of a cute moment to me that I thought it was kind of funny. Rugal turns to our two heroes and says, it's time for Rani to go with me. So there's this pool of water, kind of like a fountain, and she parts the water, and beneath it is a door that leads into a water cave. And she says, Ronnie has to come with me. There's steps leading down into the cave, and they're about to make their run from the Empire. And so Ronnie kind of stops just like in Screecher's reach and says, well, my brother can come, can't he? And then Rugal has to say, no, it's only you. Only you can come on this journey.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, this ties, like, there's an underground cave. The water is associated with both femininity as well as transformation and rebirth. And she's going into, you know, a womb-like place because of the water. So she is
the heroine's journey.
It's heroine's journey stuff all the way. And she's also being led by, like, quite an intimidating goddess-like figure. So it's an initiation and descent into the goddess. And like what I love about these stories that we've been getting so far is like dot, dot, dot. And the journey continues. And like literally your imagination can be like going anywhere with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
And I believe you'd also mentioned this with Screecher's Reach. Ronnie is actively making the choice. Mm-hmm. She could stay back with her brother, but she chooses, okay, this is part of her heroine's journey that she has to do the descent. The water cave also reminded me of Rey's water cave.
Yep, exactly.
Plunging into the water. Yep.
Very similar situation and symbolism. And,
yes.
You know, that's like the common motif of this sort of transformation of needing to go back to the womb to be transformed is really, really common. And they definitely, you know, if they're just pulling from Star Wars symbolism and then making it their own, that's amazing. Or they might be more aware of it, which is also really great.
Yes, yes, definitely. So Ronnie makes the decision to go alone. And the water, as she follows the god, and she does look nervous when she, like you had said, an intimidating goddess figure that she's going with. But she goes down into the cave, and then the water kind of covers up the cave again. And so that kind of symbolic covering up of the cave too, that it's not accessible to Charuk.
This is her journey. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I kind of, you know, it kind of closed the end of the story. But we do get one little tidbit right at the end is their father's flute comes back and pops up out of the water. She's clearly left it behind for him. And then he grabs it and he starts playing it.
And so that is his story now, is to remind him to follow his joy, seek his joy, you know, take his gifts from his father, etc., and take them on his journey. Oh, I love it.
So good. You know, when I first watched this episode, I thought it was a very straightforward, like you had said, it's kind of inevitable, the train going to the city and then her a lightsaber fight, and then she goes on her way. But then once you start digging into it and you realize all of the symbolism and mythology that you can connect it to, it's just really amazing. So
yeah,
loved it.
You're culture proud, Hammy.
Yeah, exactly. I will say, like, I was going back and watching the celebration panel for Visions, and I believe it was one of the executives from the studio, and he seemed so proud too, and just happy because this is, you know, the first thing that India has done in the Star Wars universe. So,
so cool.
It was great. Yeah,
yeah, that's awesome. All right, Hammy. Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Nope, that's it.
Awesome. Where can people find you if they are looking for you online?
I'm on Twitter at Balance Padawan.
Awesome. We will be back next with The Pit. Cheers. Thank you for listening to What the Force. I'm Marie-Claire Gould, your host. Our music is Orchestral Music by Christy Carew for What the Force. You can support the show directly on Patreon at patreon.com/whattheforce. We like to thank all our patrons, especially those who love and are obsessed with What the Force: Melody in Wild Space, How Rude, Anna Perez, Neil, Christian Luca, Carly Ann, Josh Johnson, Scott C, and Susan. Support the show by wearing the Force with our merch. Like and subscribe on YouTube or leave a 5-star review on iTunes or other podcast apps. It helps people find the show. You can connect with us on Twitter at WT Force Show, What the Force Podcast on Facebook. Our website is whattheforce.ca, or you can join the Discord. Links are all in the liner notes. Feel free to reach out and start a conversation. Cheers.